produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, artists, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, stash.normal.org, and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. Visit www.redaphid.com. It's Friday, February 29th, and it's 4:20 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, and this is your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Today, of course, is Leap Day, that extra day every 4 years that make up our leap year. What better time to mention LEAP, LEAP, or Law Enforcement Against Prohibition? Police are the people on the front lines of the war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs, and they know firsthand that prohibition doesn't work. The folks at LEAP are working hard to convince fellow law enforcement, parents, and the general public to know that we can change our laws and let our police work to solve violent crime and catch real criminals, not responsible adults who happen to choose marijuana over martinis or Marlboros. Learn more about LEAP at www.leap.cc or check the link on the Stash blog at stash.normal.org. Friday is Cannabis Community Day here at the Stash, and coming up after the news, we're speaking with Steve Bloom, our regular Friday guest, who brings us the latest on celebrities and cannabis from celebstoner.com. For our musical break, Cannabis Carrie brings us some great new music from Dread Days and their song called Free Your Mind, which reminds us that our battle is as much over people's perceptions of cannabis as it is over changing draconian drug laws. Then we wrap things up with a conversation with Dan Vietz, a Missouri attorney specializing in civil rights and the drug war, as we examine the new record prison population in the land of the free. So sit back and relax with your favorite strain and enjoy your daily audio stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. Record high ratio of Americans in prison. New York. For the first time in U.S. history, more than one of every 100 adults is in jail or prison, according to a new report documenting America's rank as the world's number one incarcerator. It urges states to curtail correction spending by placing fewer low-risk offenders behind bars. Using state-by-state data, the report says that 2,319,258 Americans were in jail or prison at the start of 2008, one out of every 99.1 adults. Whether per capita or in raw numbers, it's more than any other nation. The report, released Thursday by the Pew Center on the States, said that 50 states spent more than $49 billion on corrections last year, up from less than $11 billion 20 years earlier. The rate of increase for prison costs was 6 times greater than for higher education spending, the report said. 4 states, Vermont, Michigan, Oregon, and Connecticut, now spend more on corrections than they do on higher education, the report said. The report also said prison growth and higher incarceration rates do not reflect an increase in the nation's overall population. Instead, it said, more people are behind bars mainly because of tough sentencing measures, such as three strikes laws, that result in longer prison stays. For some groups, the incarceration numbers are especially startling, the report said. While 1 in 30 men between the ages of 20 and 34 is behind bars, for black males in that age group, the figure is 1 in 9. The racial disparity for women is also stark. One of every 355 white women, aged 35 to 39, is behind bars, compared to one of every 100 black women in that same age group. The report said the United States incarcerates more people than any other nation, far ahead of more populous China, with 1.5 million people behind bars. It said the U.S. is also the leader in inmates per capita, 750 per 100,000 people, ahead of Russia, which only incarcerates 628 per 100,000, and other former Soviet bloc nations, which round out the top 10. The U.S. is also among the world leaders in capital punishment. According to Amnesty International, its 53 executions in 2006 were exceeded only by China, Iran, Pakistan, Iraq, and Sudan. Land of the free, huh? You can thank that war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs for a lot of this increase. Mandatory minimums enacted in 1986 put more non-violent drug offenders behind bars for longer periods because, you know, prison is a great rehab. A poor inner-city black person caught with 5 grams of crack gets the same prison time as a rich suburban white person caught with half a kilo of powder. Marijuana growers legally operating in the 12 medical marijuana states face prison because the feds can't let sick people use pot, or else it ruins the whole pot-is-a-danger-to-society house of cards they've constructed to defend prohibition. Forfeiture laws turn police work into a profit venture, and conspiracy charges net dealers' girlfriends and wives, whose crime was not having anyone higher up to snitch on. It's the ultimate federal jobs program. Lock up lots of people, then build more prisons and hire more guards. Mom booked and baby born with marijuana in system. Monroe, Louisiana. A newborn was hospitalized after doctors discovered marijuana in his system shortly after his birth, and Wichita Parish Sheriff's investigators arrested the mother. Renita D. Simmons, aged 18, of West Monroe, was booked Wednesday on charges of second-degree cruelty to a juvenile. Investigators said a caseworker with Glenwood Regional Medical Center called the sheriff's office on February 4th to report a newborn with marijuana in his system. The caseworker told deputies Simmons gave birth on February 3rd, and a urine analysis was conducted on the child, according to an incident report. On Wednesday, the teenage mother admitted to investigators that she used marijuana several times during her pregnancy and used the drug approximately 2 or 3 weeks before giving birth, the report stated. Simmons also admitted to deputies that she knew the drugs could harm her unborn child. Detectives said that the infant was premature and remains hospitalized as of Thursday. Okay, first of all, does anyone want to take the bet that Renita Simmons is African American? Studies quoted in the New England Journal of Medicine show that regardless of similar or equal levels of illicit drug use during pregnancy, black women are 10 times more likely than white women to be reported to child welfare agencies for prenatal drug use. Secondly, use of cannabis by pregnant women has proven to be very effective in relieving the symptoms of morning sickness. Finally, no one can show that there is truly any significant harm to the fetus or the child resulting from a mother's use of marijuana. Now, no one at Normal recommends the use of cannabis by pregnant women. In fact, we don't recommend cannabis use by anyone. We just believe that punishing people for their use of cannabis is counterproductive, unjust, and cruel. In this case, we have a young mother who didn't harm her child, who is now saddled with a child abuse arrest record. We have an infant who may be separated from his mother if she's incarcerated. We have the state intruding on this young family with caseworkers and monitoring and paperwork. Since marijuana is illegal and remains in the system for so long, it's very easy to bust Renita Simmons for smoking a joint 2 to 3 weeks before delivery, and now she and her baby face all these consequences for an act that didn't harm the baby and probably helped Renita. Renita's mistake was in getting stoned instead of drunk. As of January 1, 2007, 32 states, including Louisiana, had no provisions for child abuse or neglect regarding alcohol use during pregnancy, despite the scientific consensus that such use leads to fetal alcohol syndrome. South African agribusiness looks to hemp farming. South Africa. The Council for Scientific and Industrial Research, CSIR, is piloting a multi-billion rand agribusiness project that could encourage Eastern Cape farmers to grow hemp and flax for the textile industry. The project is aimed at boosting economic activity. Hemp and flax are used for various purposes, including textiles and food. Quote, growing and processing flax and hemp will provide a new industry that is viable and has the potential to be worth billions if farmers get the required interventions in terms of government subsidies, end quote, CSIR Fibers and Textile Manager Abisha Tempo said. Although hemp is illegal in South Africa, as it is a member of the cannabis sativa family, various organizations, including the CSIR and the Agricultural Research Council, are lobbying government to change the legislation. CSIR Natural Plant Fiber Center Manager Sunshine Blau said, quote, the advantage of the two plants is that flax is grown in the winter and hemp in the summer. Farmers can grow both in different seasons without having to acquire different technologies for production and processing, as both plants use the same technology. In 2004, South Africa imported 100 million rand worth of flax and 75 million rand worth of hemp. It would not make business sense to import if you could buy locally, end quote. Well, the United States and South Africa are still holding back their farmers from growing this lucrative crop, while the rest of the industrialized world is more than happy to supply us with their overpriced hemp exports. Hemp, of course, doesn't look at all like consumer cannabis. It's not at all smokable, and you could never get high from it. But because it's in the same plant family as the one that does get you high, our government bans it. Even though hemp is not a drug, it is eradicated by our Drug Enforcement Administration and prohibited as a Schedule I drug. Considering the myriad uses of hemp, not the least of which would help us end our oil addiction and feed the hungry, it is not just ridiculous that non-drug hemp is prohibited, it's a crime against humanity.
James Roquefort here from PeopleRadio.com, and you're listening to Normal, the podcast for the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Oh, I didn't know they needed reforming. It's illegal, you say? I'll be right back. Sorry, I had to flush my goldfish down the toilet. What was this about marijuana? Oh, well, now on with the show.
All right, well, it's Friday here on The Stash, and it's Cannabis Community Day, and we'd like to turn to Steve Bloom from CelebStoner.com with all the latest news and information on celebrities and people in the world of sports with regard to marijuana. So, Steve, welcome back to The Stash.
Hey, Russ, how are you?
Doing really, really good. We missed you last week. That was my fault. I had other commitments I had to make. So we've actually got 2 weeks' worth of bus to round up here. So let's go ahead and just let everyone know what's happening in the celebrity world here. There's been a lot of high-profile arrests for marijuana lately.
In this last two-month period from January to February, there have been eight celebrity busts, primarily hip-hop stars and athletes, mostly African-American. If we go to the most recent one, Kevin Falk, running back for the New England Patriots, he got arrested down in Lafayette, Louisiana, while going to a Lil Wayne show, the rapper. He's from Lafayette. He went to LSU. He's a star football player. They should know him pretty well down there. He gets pulled over by some authority there in the building, or police, whomever, are making these searches. They search him, and they find four blunts. In his case, maybe because Kevin Falk is known so well down there, he was given a summons. Interestingly, he's the second Patriot to be arrested for marijuana since the Super Bowl. The other one was a guy named Willie Andrews, who is more of a substitute player for the Patriots. He was arrested with half a pound of marijuana in near Boston 2 days after the ball. That's just one of many arrests that have occurred this month. Last week you had a run of musicians who got arrested. So usually the celebrities who get arrested are either athletes or musicians and occasionally actors. So it started on the 23rd. The singer Jay Holiday was arrested in Maryland. He had just completed a performance at a university in Maryland, and I was driving away from the show, and he was picked off by police. It was kind of a fairly standard possession arrest due to a search at a car. He was stopped for speeding. The police must have smelled marijuana, and they said that they observed marijuana on his person, and he was arrested. Bigger name was Snoop Dogg.
Well, wait, Snoop Dogg got busted for marijuana?
Yeah, believe it or not.
Wow.
This will be his fourth time in the last couple of years. He had two arrests going back to California, one at an airport while he was waiting for somebody to pick somebody up at Burbank, and another outside the Jay Leno show when the police kind of were waiting for him and picked him off as he came out from after had an appearance. So it was kind of the same kind of like police ganging up on the Burbank police. And then last year he had a problem in Sweden where he was, you know, kind of, he was arrested, but I don't think it ever really quite went down as an actual arrest, some sort of citation for marijuana. Now, this one is in New York. He was in New York last week for, I don't know, the week doing promotional appearances. He has a new album coming up, and he's got his TV show, Fatherhood. And he was in New York hanging out, and like a lot of people in New York, they like to step outside because you're not allowed to smoke inside any type of club or restaurant or bar. So he stepped outside of this club called Lotus on 14th Street and most likely was smoking a blunt. I haven't heard the first-person accounts, but you can kind of guess. And police swooped in, and whether they knew it was Snoop Dogg or not initially, you know, they hit him with a summons, a ticket. And in New York, you sort of followed, you know, what's been going on in New York over the last, say, decade with marijuana arrests, street marijuana arrests, where people are caught smoking. New York is decriminalized, a state, but within the city itself, the Giuliani administration, when Giuliani was mayor, found kind of a loophole, and it's basically, if you're smoking in public, you could be arrested for that. That's criminal, versus having possession of marijuana, which would be a ticket. So he was doing kind of the same that a lot of other people have been doing in New York, and the numbers were just astronomical under Giuliani. It started with less than 1,000 a year, skyrocketed to $70,000 a year under Giuliani. Giuliani's been out of office now for two terms, and Bloomberg's been the mayor, and since then it's gone down to about half the totals, but not down to zero. It's about 30,000 people are getting arrested a year in New York for publicly smoking. What normally happens is you go to jail, and then it's kind of blown off, and they don't really follow it up, but they kind of give you a scare. In the case of Snoop Dogg, he got kind of treated with kid gloves. He didn't go to jail. They must have said, oh, well, Snoop Dogg, they gave him a ticket. Earlier in that week, just a few days before, Aaron Carter, the pop singer, was arrested in Texas. He was just driving from on I-10 going east from, I must have been driving from L.A. to Florida and straight across, and he had dogs with him, and they pulled the dogs out on him, apparently, and they pulled him over in a small town outside of Austin, about 100 miles west of Austin, a town called Junction, pulled him over for an infraction. They said that he had his license plates were tags were not up to date. He had less than an ounce of marijuana on him. He was kept overnight, though, which is interesting. So he didn't get the nice treatment that Snoop Dogg got. You know, it depends where you get arrested, obviously.
Yeah. I was going to say Texas.
Yeah, this is Texas. So they don't know who he is, nor do they care. I'm not saying celebrities should get special treatment, but obviously, you know, I just wish the laws didn't exist to begin with. But since they do, I guess everybody should be treated the same. And I guess that's the way most people would have been treated if you got pulled over. The week before that, Juvenile, the rapper, was arrested, also in the same area, but in Mississippi, on the I-10, heading to New Orleans just before the NBA All-Star game. And he was pulled over for an infraction, again, some sort of, you know, vehicle infraction. You know, what I've really been counseling over and over and over again when I speak on this show in particular is that all people out there, celebrities or just average citizens who smoke marijuana in their vehicle, should be super, super careful. That's where I'd say 85% of the marijuana arrests are taking place these days, in your vehicle. The other big-name bust was back in January was Lil Wayne, who we were just mentioned before regarding Kevin Falk's arrest down in Louisiana, you know, at the Cajun Dome at the Lil Wayne show. Lil Wayne's bus got pulled over by, this is in January, got pulled over by Border Patrol around Yuma, Arizona. Again, the reason for all these pullovers are always questionable, and that's maybe how, you know, you can win your case. You know, it's like, why did you get pulled over? What was the reason for your search? But, you know, you'll have to go to court to deal with that. But in his case, he was traveling to California via Arizona, you know, en route to his next show. And the bus was pulled over for what they call the routine type of, you know, search and check of the bus, a commercial thing. And it's also near the border where they tend to pull a lot of vehicles over for immigration reasons. And they found a huge stash on the bus. They found almost a quarter pound of pot. They found ecstasy, cocaine, a gun, paraphernalia. He was hit pretty hard with charges. And he's admitted, you know, that it was kind of like he let things go a little bit in the bus because we posted yesterday a quote up on Celeb Stoner from Lil Wayne where, you know, he was basically admitting that, you know, he really didn't, you know, have it together on the bus where, you know, you let things go and you get caught. And he said if the police would have stopped the bus that night and I had everything under control, it would have been nothing. I was responsible at the time, messed up on my part, no ifs, ands, buts about it. I don't blame nobody but myself. I can't blame nobody for not taking my charge. This is my bus. So, you know, it's very similar to what happened to Willie Nelson a few years ago down in Louisiana as well. When his bus was pulled over, he had almost a quarter pound of marijuana. He had about an ounce of mushrooms. He ended up getting off all of that fairly easily, ultimately, when you consider the amounts. You know, he was he and his road manager each paid $1,000 fines and went on like a six-month probation. So it'll be interesting if Lil Wayne gets the same sort of treatment that Willie Nelson got for about the same amounts, the same type of arrest, the same type of bus stop. It'll be interesting how a hip-hop star is treated versus a legendary country western star.
Steve Bloom, it's always a pleasure to speak with you. You got plenty to say here on the marijuana issue, and thanks for tracking all the celeb stoners for us out there at celebstoner.com.
Hey, Russ, thanks for giving me so much time on your show today.
Hey, no problem. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks a lot.
Now it's time to play Pass the Stash, where you can win cool prizes from Normal.
Well, I'm very happy to begin something new here on the Daily Audio Stash, and that is our Stash Contest of the Week. We want to make this an interactive podcast and be able to take questions from you, the listeners, and the readers out at our Stash blog at stash.normal.org. So this week, we're giving away three copies of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's new book, The Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Here's how you can win. Just submit your questions to Dr. Earlywine at 420research@gmail.com or send your questions directly to me at stash@normal.org. The topic for this contest questions goes out to the parents. As a parent, what is your greatest concern about raising your children in the middle of the war on drugs? Student drug testing, loss of financial aid, health issues, how to talk to your kids about marijuana, whatever your question regarding parenting and marijuana, please send it in. Three questions will be selected by Dr. Earlywine for response on next Wednesday's Daily Audio Stash. You will remain anonymous, and you will win a copy of Dr. Earlywine's new book, The Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Or if you'd just like to get your own copy of The Parent's Guide to Marijuana, check out our blog at stash.normal.org. We've got the links out to amazon.com, and you can order that book right away. Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take the time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. Well, it's the end of the week here on the Daily Audio Stash, and it's time for a little music to unwind us from the week and wind us up for the weekend. Today's music hit, Free Your Mind, from Dread Days, will put you into just the right state of mind. Dread Days is a six-member band from L.A. that plays an intriguing blend of reggae, hip-hop, and soul. They are a multiracial, multicultural group of talented musicians. Take this hit, cannabis community. Free your mind. The Days plays all over the country, so be sure and check out their MySpace page for concert dates and venues. Their message of touching the world through positive music and encouraging love and peace reminds me of why I got involved with the cannabis community in the first place. For more information on this artist, check out music.podshow.com. We'll also have links to their MySpace page up at our blog, stash.normal.org, where you can also download the MP3 of this song from Dread Days, It's Free Your Mind.
Let the vibe jump, you better Hi, this is Allison Holcomb, director of the Marijuana Education Project at the ACLU of Washington, and you're listening to Radical Russ on the Normal Daily Audio Stash.
All right, well, we're very happy to have Dan Vietz joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash. He's an attorney who is specializing in criminal defense for drug cases. He's also a former president of the Missouri Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. So, Dan, welcome to the Stash.
Thank you very much, Russ.
Wanted to talk to you about this issue that just this has been in the headlines just today, where the United States is finally more than 1 in 100 people now in prison in our system, and which now sets the United States as the world's number one jailer, both in per capita numbers and just raw numbers. It was quite surprising to see that China, with its population of over 1.2 billion, only incarcerates 1.5 million people, and we have now over 2 million.
That's right.
So what what is driving this record incarceration numbers that we have here in the United States?
Primarily a mania to incarcerate people for nonviolent, victimless offenses. There are politicians, many politicians, have this mindset that their ticket to getting elected is to promise to be tougher on crime and to enact harsher, meaning longer, sentences for any kind of crime you can come up with. And they're wrong. I mean, that's the irony of the situation, is that every poll of the public, the general public, reveals the public is way ahead of the politicians. And they understand that being tough on crime is also being stupid on crime, that it wastes an incredible amount of financial resources, and it also wastes an incredible amount of human resources. It's just an insane situation. And it's very important this study has come out at this time, because if the press will pick up on it and make it an issue in the presidential election, then perhaps we have some hope to change the situation.
What are some of the statutory issues now that help to lead to this? If we get into the technical issues, the article mentions are three strikes and you're out, and it also mentions mandatory minimums. Tell some of our listeners who may not fully understand what's going on with those, what those mean.
Three strikes bills mean different things in different states, and the great majority of the people behind bars in this country are there because of state laws and state prosecutions. So I should hasten to point out it's not only the presidential race, but it's very much a matter of local and state government races as well, whether this policy changes or continues. But the concept of mandatory minimums applies under some state laws, but generally refers to the scheme of sentencing that was established by the United States Congress back in 1984, a very appropriate year for that new scheme to be put in place. And indeed, for most drug offenses that are federally prosecuted, there are mandatory minimum sentences, which deprive the judges themselves of the discretion to sentence people in a rational way, that is, to sentence people who deserve a chance at probation to receive probation.
Now, yes, a lot of this has to do, with the war on marijuana users, but also, on a broader sense, just the war on drugs in general. And regarding those mandatory minimums, one of the most offensive parts of the mandatory minimum sentencing scheme has to do with cocaine. And maybe you could explain a little bit about why that is a policy problem.
Well, a very arbitrary distinction was drawn by Congress in the wake of the national hysteria over crack cocaine back in the 80s and early 90s. Congress enacted mandatory minimum sentences, which in some cases provide for penalties of as much as 100 times greater for possessing the same amount of crack cocaine as for that amount of powder cocaine. And that doesn't make any sense. I mean, back in those days, the press and politicians were trying to capitalize on the hysteria that surrounded crack cocaine. That was the new devil drug of the day. And it's turned out that crack cocaine isn't that remarkably different from regular old powder cocaine. But the fact is, for whatever reason, that there is a high correlation between African Americans being prosecuted on crack cocaine charges and European Americans being prosecuted on powder cocaine charges. Obviously, it's not 100% correlation, but there's a high degree of correlation. And, of course, it just happens that Congress mandates these horribly long, harsh sentences for the crack cocaine, which happens to be the drug of choice for a large number of African Americans, apparently. So the effect whether the intent was there or not, they certainly knew darn well that the effect would be to incarcerate lots more black people for lots longer periods of time.
Yeah, the chemical itself, cocaine is cocaine, whether we're talking about crack or powder.
That's absolutely right. I mean, it's just irrational, the distinction. But, you know, and that is a factor in the sentencing problem that we have now. But you're also correct that marijuana is a major part of the problem. I just represented a man who is facing a 22-year federal prison sentence for marijuana distribution. And I'll tell you, the federal system has a lot of things wrong with it. One of them is that people can be found guilty, as in this case, of a certain amount of marijuana, and yet when it comes time to sentence those people, the court can find that they're really guilty and should be punished for a far larger amount of marijuana. In this case, my client was charged with a 1,000-kilogram conspiracy. He was found not guilty of that 1,000-kilogram conspiracy, just as we predicted he would be and should be. But the judge, when he comes in for sentencing, the judge says, well, even though the jury found you not guilty of this 1,000-kilogram conspiracy, I think you really did distribute over 1,000 kilograms, and she sentenced him based on a figure of something like 2,500 kilograms, which was just insane, based only on the word of cooperating co-defendants who had everything to gain, nothing to lose, by making up fantastic stories about these supposed major quantities of marijuana that no one ever saw, but there's no other evidence they ever existed except the word of a rat.
We hear so many stories like that where the case is decided off of, or the case is prosecuted on conspiracy charges, not the actual possession of the marijuana itself.
That's exactly right, Russ. That's one of the worst things about the federal system. I'll tell you, I hate to say it, but I've got to go into court right now and
defend
some people on marijuana charges, so I really appreciate the chance to talk to you and the listeners to the Normal Stash today.
Well, thanks for joining us. Dan Vietz is the criminal defense attorney just now getting ready to defend someone on marijuana charges. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Russ, very much.
All right.
Have a good day.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you with today's cannabis quote from Albert Einstein, physicist and Nobel Prize winner. Quote, "The prestige of government has undoubtedly been lowered considerably by the prohibition law, for nothing is more destructive of respect for the government and the law of the land than passing laws which cannot be enforced. It is an open secret that the dangerous increase in crime in this country is closely connected with this," end quote. Einstein was talking about prohibition of alcohol, but it's just as valid in talking about the prohibition of marijuana. Have yourselves a great weekend and take care of each other, and we'll see you next week on the Daily Audio Stash.